Hi, it's Elise Hugh from the Texas Tribune. For our final Tribcast of 2010, we've picked out some of our favorite discussions from the year, either the post-election discussions after the primary or the general, or just some topics we liked to talk about. One of our favorite topics of the year that we couldn't forget in our year-end review, terror babies. Here it goes. Something that's been in the national news this
week.
Heard
nothing at all about that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, Evan, you've changed if you have not heard about this.
I used to be good. I did used to be good.
Sorry.
Thank God for these people. We would have nothing to do.
So Louie Gohmert, actually in June on the House floor, congressman from the 1st District up in Tyler from Texas, claimed that a former FBI official told him of an insidious plot in which pregnant women would deliver babies in the U.S. who would then, 20, 30 years later, come back, get trained as terrorists, and then come back to wreak havoc on the U.S. And, you know, this, he claims, is a gaping hole, quote-unquote, in our security.
I can't believe you're talking about this. All of our throats will now be cut.
That's right. And he also will not give up his sources, saying that he heard that, or his source said that throats would be cut if this happened. Debbie Riddle has also followed suit and is also sourcing former FBI officials, to which a former FBI official came out on CNN to say, I don't know why there's random FBI officials roaming the halls of the Texas legislature.
This is the screenplay for the first Alien movie. You go plant a bunch of eggs on a planet.
Screenplay for Salt,
like immigration
actually.
Version of the Manchurian Candidate,
I guess,
actually,
right?
This is actually very close to the plot of Salt, where children get get trained as terrorists very early on in their lives and then come back after they grow up. A lot of attention focused on this. Debbie Riddle and Louie Gohmert are really standing their ground. And
they both made crazy TV appearances this week. Right. I mean, they're, as I like to say, they're talkers now. They both went on the Anderson Cooper show, I guess separately, right? And made spectacles of themselves, either for better or for worse, depending on which side of this issue you're on. That's giving everybody a lot of ground here.
It is. Very generous of you.
You just got to watch these videos. It's just an incredible... It's an incredible thing.
Right, and South Carolina usually gets to be the national state laughingstock.
In fact, John Stewart said last night in a very long piece, blistering piece, mocking Gohmert, are you sure this guy's not from South Carolina? Which, you know, I guess we take that
That's
as a compliment,
probably a
right?
dig at Colbert.
Yeah.
Right, but, you know, I guess on the flip side, not many people are coming out to defend Gohmert besides Riddle, right?
Well, you know, this happens to both parties from time to time, where somebody in your party goes so far out that no one takes up their defense and that there's actually a threat to the brand. So if you sort of look at the big map here, the Republicans are looking at this year, which is looking up to this point like a really Republican year. People are mad at Obama. They're mad about health care. The economy hasn't turned yet, yada, yada, yada. And then the Republicans, given this opportunity, at least two Republicans, go on national television and sort of make a spectacle of themselves. And every day that people are talking about something like this, they're not talking about the problems with the Democrats. This is not a win for the Republicans,
but
and it's hard
but
on the
tie
brand.
This back to what we were talking about earlier. Neither Debbie Riddle nor Louie Gohmert is going to lose the bids for re-election that come up this November.
No, but it's an association thing. If you're Chet Edwards and you're running for your life in a seat in Central Texas. Chet Edwards is a congressman from Waco. He's got a very tough challenge from Bill Flores of Bryan. And he's defending himself. He's going in front of a group of, say, conservative Democrats or a group of independents and asking them for their vote. In order to peel votes away from a Bill Flores, he's going to say, did you see Debbie Riddle on TV? Did you see Louie Gohmert? That's his party.
Well, and it could, I mean, not that Gohmert... Well,
right. Although there may be parts of that district in which Gohmert and Riddle are folk heroes as a result of that.
Well, that may be right. That
but, you know,
right.
it kind of is similar to Michelle Bachmann talking about real Americans or congressmen with un-American feelings. Her opponent, who nobody knew his name and he had no money at all of a sudden got like $2 million from a coordinated fundraising effort from Democrats.
And Bachmann...
But so did
and
she.
Almost, right. Well, but... But he came close. I mean, he still lost, but it wasn't a 20-point race. It was a 5-point race, 4-point race, something like that. And so, you know, Gohmert may not lose, but it'd be interesting to see if all of a sudden he has an opponent that has more money than what's
you know,
in his pocket.
Reeve Hamilton did a story for us a few months ago about the Democrat running against Joe Barton after Barton apologized to BP. And, you know, the theory behind the story was you know, sometimes you're the guy who's lucky enough to draw an opponent who does something unbelievably controversial and you've got a race. Has anybody heard from that guy again?
No, I think that was the high point of his day.
The last moment.
Michelle Bachmann, by the way, has turned this into, you know, lemon into lemonade. She's in Dallas either this week or next, raising money, and the tagline, Highland Park maybe, and the tagline for this fundraiser is Nancy Pelosi's number one target, Michelle Bachmann, will be in Dallas to raise money, help her fight the fight.
So this may ultimately help Gohmert and Riddle in their own little world.
That's right. The thing. I mean, this is a topic for another podcast, but it seems like these days, the more extreme you are, the more attention you get, and the more you can bank on that, you know? It's being a reality TV star.
I have to tell you that, you know, I was not necessarily thinking that Debbie Riddle should be in the hot seat in the Texas Tribune conversation series, but this has made Debbie Riddle a commodity, and so we do have Debbie Riddle on September 15th, and I expect that she will be as resolute in her defense of her position then as she's been on television, because there's no margin in her not being.
Right.
That's what she believes.
Right.
And for her crowd in Tomball, the people who elect her every 2 years and are likely to elect her again, this is red meat.
Go get them, girl.
Let's go get them.
Right.
And now a look at our reactions after the March 2010 primary, where we discuss the surprises from the election that was.
What were the biggest surprises last night for you guys?
Tara Rios Ibarra, that was a big TLR, Texans for lawsuit reform and trial lawyers fight. I didn't think that she was going to go down. She's a freshman lawmaker out of South Padre Island. She lost narrowly. That was a big surprise.
Well, she lost significantly.
She lost big. She lost 40. She got 42%.
See, this is the last time I checked was 11:30 p.m. last night.
but you're right in that I think while we all expected that race was going to be close, I don't think we expected it to go exactly the way. I'm, you know, I'm a believer in karma. Betty Brown. Mm-hmm. Betty Brown.
That was a huge surprise.
If only her name had been more Chinese, she would have won that election.
You got to explain your joke.
That Betty Brown had offended Asian Americans by intimating to someone who was testifying before her
committee
that, you know, who is Asian American, you know, basically she said the equivalent of, if only you people,
you and your citizens,
would make
citizens
your names easier to pronounce or understand.
Americanize them.
Americanize them. I mean, you know, I just think, you know, bad form is ultimately, you know,
and she lost
determinative,
by 108 votes at the most recent count to her former legislative aide, who's
really couldn't take her.
He's a very, very young-looking guy, but you know, so far he's winning. So,
yeah,
Ben,
what do you think about big surprises?
Oh, I was kind of surprised that this is a local state board race that Kent Mercer won re-election so easily.
Going away, right?
I mean, you know, he just in that when you compare him to the I'm forgetting his name, former chair of the board.
Don McElroy.
Thank you. Don McElroy lost his re-election bid in kind of a similar race. It was the what has been perceived as the hard right Republican current, you know, incumbent of the school board up against a more moderate Republican who is saying, look, let's take the politics out and get back to education. So that was the McElroy race, and he lost pretty much the same race in the Mercer side, and Mercer wins.
Well, yeah, and in fact, Tynesse Miller, who is the Dallas-based state board member, also lost in a race very similar to the one you described, running against somebody who said, an unknown, a teacher who said state board shouldn't be in a lot of this stuff. So you had two state board members from the rightward flank of the board go down against moderates, but not Mercer.
The funniest thing is, though, Tynesse Miller compared to Mercer and McElroy is a moderate. If you cover the state board,
well,
you
know, everything's relative.
I know.
When Tynesse Miller went on the board, she was sort of seen as the hard right member, and she's now the moderate Republican, sort of the voice of reason over there.
The idea that two social conservatives, reliable social conservative votes on the state board, which McElroy certainly was, and I think it's fair to say Miller was, are now being replaced by moderates. That really does have the potential to shape the character of that board.
She wasn't one of the hard right votes.
But she was probably with those guys more than not.
Yeah, but she wasn't part of the sort of the critical
Cynthia
block.
Cynthia Dunbar's out, though, and she was
hard
right.
And the argument against this is that Mercer survived easily, and he is certainly one of them.
Now, Dunbar's successor is not yet known because that was going to be a runoff, too.
It's an open seat, right?
There were basically a third, and a third.
But she won't be casting votes. Won't be casting a vote. So. I saved the big one for you, Ross, one of the big surprises of the night, one of the statewide.
I actually thought this was going to happen. I think I was the only one.
You called it.
Everybody was looking at me crazy. Victor Carrillo, and this is what happens. You know, there's a Victor Carrillo is the chairman of the Texas Railroad Commission. He was appointed and then won in his own right in 2004. He was running for re-election. Nobody knew he was on the ballot, including a lot of oil and gas people. He just didn't run a campaign. It was under, well under $1 million. The perspective exercise here is that in Texas, to run a week of TV at statewide rates where people recognize you is about $1.5 million, $1.8 million. He didn't have enough money to run a statewide mail campaign. People didn't know he was on the ballot, and so you throw him on the ballot. The guy you throw him on the ballot against is David Porter. In a Republican primary, I'm going to overgeneralize, but I got stuff to back it up. In a Republican primary statewide, if you run someone with an Hispanic name against someone with an anglicized name and nobody can discern any other differences between the two, the anglicized name will win. And in fact, Victor Carrillo got walloped in this re-election race.
We'll go back to the Supreme Court race a few years ago where the incumbent Xavier Rodriguez lost to Stephen Smith.
Right.
Can't get more anglicized than that.
Right.
Right? Stephen Smith.
Yeah, this goes on and on. And so the Republicans, you know, sort of have to, you know, answer for this and recover from it. On the other side of the ballot, just point this out just to, as ballast, Linda Chavez Thompson running against Ronnie Earl, both of whom were mostly unknown statewide, in a Democratic primary, all other things being equal. The Democratic big vote counties are on the southern border, and Chavez Thompson got 53%
without a runoff,
34%.
Yeah. And I asked Mike Basilis this morning, does your party have a problem with Hispanic candidates? And he basically said no. He kind of did the Ralph Cramden Hamada for a while. And he said something about Eva Guzman, but of course, Eva Guzman was running against Rose Vela. If Eva Guzman had been running against, you know, Rose Smith. Weinstein,
Smith. Yeah.
You know, or something like that, it might have been a different outcome.
Right.
Of course, the November 2010 general election was also full of surprises. Here were our first reactions.
See, he's not, so it's just the three of us.
That's right.
So you, it's two against Ben.
Two against Ben. Do you have your notebook, Ben?
I was told there would be no math.
Well, speaking of math.
Yeah, let's talk about kind of the big headlines out of election night, Tuesday night. We've got Bill White losing to Governor Rick Perry, who won an unprecedented fourth term by 13 percentage points.
And so much for the 39% governor. He's now the
54% governor. Sorry.
Which well, it's a lot. I mean, yeah. he did a – it's almost 55%. He's the 55%
yeah.
governor. That's and, it. You know, he showed the level of strength that people said he'd have to show to be a plausible – remember
that. That's right.
He'll be a presidential candidate if it's early and decisive, and it was both early and decisive.
It right. was so funny being at the event last night.
At
with
the Perry event?
Well, yeah, I was at the Perry event out of the
Exotic
Trying
to ignore
ranch.
The symbolism of the Republican leadership gathering to celebrate well,
where the
a,
deer
a
and the antelope roam.
Yeah. You know, the first thing I said, I walked up to one of the Perry staffers and I said, hey, I just made up this rumor and I want you to confirm it or not. Will Perry ride in on an elephant? I mean, mm-hmm. we're at a game ranch, right?
Mm-hmm.
They said they could not confirm nor deny that. But anyway.
That's good. Well, the other big headline in the bridge.
She apparently didn't think it was that funny because she raced right
like,
past it.
Hey, man. I don't know how many hours we've gone now without sleeping, so it's rough. Yeah. But the other big stunner last night is just how large of a Republican rout we saw in the Texas
22
House.
22 net seats. So I spoke to the speaker the other day on at the end of the week, and the conversation was basically, it's going to be 6. It's going to be 10. It's going to be 6. It's going to be 10. I don't think anybody in the Republican leadership, even the most optimistic, well, Mike Basilis this morning at Trib Live, who is Governor Perry's pollster and who knows a thing or two about Republican victories, said he thought 12. No one predicted 22. We said last week on the podcast, well, if it's going to be 10, it's going to go through one of the Austin area state reps. Well, how about 3?
Right.
And
Rose
how about
gone.
Pending
Bolton
a recount,
gone.
Right. Maldonado gone, Rose gone, Bolton gone, and Donna Howard.
Could
you know,
be on.
Pulled a Linda Harper Brown from 2008, 15 votes. And Dan Neal, her Republican challenger, has already called for a recount. Pete Gallego barely survived. The Republicans are now at 99. Their previous high watermark was 88 at the apex of the Craddock era.
And going into election night yesterday, the margin was 4 seats. It was 77 Republicans to 73 Democrats. We're now at 99 Republicans and 51 Democrats. Marinate on that. I mean, that is a massive pickup.
So assume 22 Democrats lost yesterday, and how many more Democrats are going to lose next year during redistricting as a result of this? There are direct defeats and indirect defeats.
Do you think there is any way that this makes redistricting a more moderate a more calm process, in that it's not like they have to go out and stretch and reach and do something ridiculous to get 100 people in the Texas House. They've got 99.
Well, it's not going to be calm. I think what it is going to be certain. I think it's going to be decisive. I think that the fact of the size of the Republican majority means that the minority party, in this case the Democrats, have very little they can do to stop the speeding train.
No, just pray that Obama is still president when it gets to the Justice Department.
They will have to pray.
Yes.
But, of course, the best thing for Rick Perry's presidential hopes is for the Obama Justice Department to mess with Texas.
Oh, my goodness.
To mess with the maps.
Right, that's it. That's their only.
And one Democrat told me last night, actually, that the only way to spin this positively for them is that Republicans, now that they have such a clear majority, are going to get all the credit slash blame for all the tough decisions that are coming up next session.
The Pottery Barn rule is in effect. You broke it, you bought it, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's it. So, I mean, and the fact is, on the Texas side, that's the case. And at the federal level, where the Republicans have taken back the U.S. House, it's exactly the same thing. They took back the House. I think they won 60 seats. Well, okay, you wanted to govern? Govern. That's how it's going to be.
And for our kicker, we picked our funniest moments, either from Ben, Ross, or others of the Tribcast year that was.
Couple of weeks. So,
but this is not a choice between steak and chicken. This is a choice between steak and screws, or steak and sheet metal. The difference between these two is significant enough that it's not as if they're looking ahead to next week to decide between beef or pork. It's between beef and gravel.
I guess both campaigns are going, which one of us is he calling screws right
now? Explain that, Reeve.
Well, I just didn't know that the opposite of chicken was sheet metal. I'm learning something on this Tribcast.
For a change. Stick around, kid. There are probably a couple more.
If you could see my brainwave, it would be flat. It looks just like Nebraska right now.
Who's running against Carol Kent?
Your brainwave is moving to the Pac-10.
I couldn't get it out fast enough. Oh, he beat me.
Oh, boy.
Excellent. No Nebraska jokes will go.
We should actually move to political football here.
That's a good topic.
Sort of an interesting
invite
thing.
Buddy Jones down from the ninth floor or whatever it is. Yeah.
Our Baylor region right here in this very building.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, that actually is a very interesting question, is the clients get caught in this fight between these people. And I got to say, I haven't seen the term client one, client two, client three used so much since the Elliott Smith.
Dr. Seuss.
I love that. It's just,
Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss. How do we say out of that, Elise?
One client, two client, three client.
Red client, blue client.
That's right.
Lisi say this morning, Reeve, that if you just broke down the undecided vote, which I think is 6%.
Right, 6%. Right. There are 2% of Texans say that they're definitely not voting for either of them.
And they want somebody else. Who else is available? I guess the Libertarian. Maybe we should put our sound guy, Todd Weisman, up. Governor Weisman, I will resign from the Tribune to run that campaign.
The Libertarian in this race, you can just...
It's kind of classic Donald Segretti kind of gut...
It's schoolyard.
Stab
it's
politics.
Great, yeah.
You know, so let's say that today Bill White had an omelet. So the release that the minor would put out on behalf of Perry campaign is, on day 66 of liberal trial lawyer Bill White not releasing his tax returns, comma, he had an omelet.
And that's the Tribcast 2010. Thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to a fun 2011.